This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Mike Shope.
I have these notes, but I gotta say I'm just fired up to be here today.
And the Bulldog.
Pretty cool. Pretty damn cool.
Woo! On WGR.
Come on! Get up! Come on, get up if you're as psyched as I am.
Sports Radio 550.
I love that every time. That we play that three times a week. I just love it every time. I don't even know who it is. Is it the Clippers guy?
Clippers owner, yeah.
Ballmer?
I believe that's his name. Yes, Steve Ballmer, I think.
He's the one, he dances with Bill Gates in another popular viral clip.
I believe that's the same dude.
Yeah. With, you know, they're both on the same stage. They're not like,
right.
It's not a slow dance or something.
Right, there's not a dip involved.
No. Right. All right. So, anyway, we have Doug Farrar with us. Always a pleasure to have Doug on. He joins us via the West Her Hotline. You can follow Doug on Twitter at NFL_Doug Farrar, author, writer, always spicy and interesting on social media. We like that, Doug. We want you to keep that up, if you will, please.
I don't think I can go any other way. So,
right.
Of, you know.
be yourself, right? You be you. That's right.
Well, I am who you thought I was.
You're a good follow, and thanks again for coming on here. So the Bills lose. I know we're all sort of in shock. The Bills lose their first game to Pittsburgh. How surprising is it, if it is surprising to you?
Well, I think what was surprising was the Steelers' game plan, because you guys remember Week 14 last year, they blitzed the bleep out of Josh Allen. And it really didn't go that well for them, and that's par for the course, because last year Allen was probably the best quarterback in the NFL against the blitz. If it wasn't Mahomes, it was Josh Allen. So they come into this game, and, you know, Dable's going to do what he's going to do. And, you know, even as the game went on, it was, you know, empty package, no running backs, five receivers, which last year only the Cardinals did more empty. If they had a running back in, it was usually in a spread formation. They kind of stuck with what they did. The Steelers, though, they blitzed Josh Allen once in that entire game, one blitz, and they still led the league with 11 pressures. They were third in pressure rate behind, I think, the Jaguars and the Dolphins, without blitzing. Now, of course, it helps when Cameron Hayward takes all his Aaron Donald pills, and my gosh, that guy was incredible. And you have T.J. Watt, but they did a lot of stuff that I don't think the Bills expected. They had T.J. Watt playing off ball sometimes. Minka Fitzpatrick, who usually plays free safety, was in the slot. He was playing robber. He was coming down from too high to sort of cut off the, you know, the slot crossers, which is a big part of that offense. And Minka is a top five, you know, he's a top five safety, I guess, and that game is a top five DB. The overarching point is this was very much like what Todd Bowles did to the Chiefs in the last Super Bowl, where they had played once that year, and Todd Bowles blitzed Mahomes a lot. And then it came to the Super Bowl, and I think the Chiefs were game planning for something they didn't get. And if you look at Allen, I think he had seven deep attempts, completed one. Well, that speaks to a couple things. I think the plan, watching the tape again, I think the plan was to get the ball out quick, because here comes the pressure. I think Buffalo's problem was the pressure came. The problem was there were no empty spots in coverage because they weren't blitzing. So it was a perfect storm by the Steelers. I think Mike Tomlin and Keith Butler coached it up brilliantly. I don't know how many other teams can do that, but they just, you know, they kind of ran into a buzzsaw there.
Yeah, I wonder if there's room here, Doug, for like some analysis that includes the Bills failing to make any sort of change to that. Because I was surprised watching the game, and then of course afterward learning how infrequently that Pittsburgh was blitzing, because that is, you know, Blitzburg, that's their calling card. So it's possible they crossed up the Bills there. But with that said, there has to be some alternative, right? If the zones are all flooded with defenders and the pass rush is winning with just four guys or even sometimes three, it was pretty infrequent, but still it happened. What should Brian Daboll and the Bills have done to make things a little easier for Josh Allen?
There was a point in the third quarter where I was rewatching the tape, and I thought at two different times that I had watched the same play pre-snap, I thought I had duplicated the play by accident, and it wasn't. It was the same formation and just a different call, and maybe Sanders runs, you know, a 5 yard out instead of a 4 yard slant. And I go, oh, okay, it is a different play. But yeah, I mean, I didn't see a lot of motion to disrupt or inform. You know, I didn't see a lot. They played a lot of man. I mean, they played some zone. They played a lot of match. It was just man, and it was like, okay, we're going to get pressure with four. Sometimes they got pressure with three. I believe one of Allen's pressures, one of his near sacks, is a three-man front, and those are covered sacks. So, to me, if I'm Brian Daboll, and the guy is a great offensive coach, there's no question about that, but, you know, can you run some man beaters? Can you – because the short stuff – that only works to a point. And if it gets to the point where you know the short stuff is coming, well, the Steelers are perfectly capable of creating a hood over your passing game with their four deep guys, and that's all you're going to get. You have to at some point challenge them deep, and I know they tried that at times. It didn't work. You're moving forward to Miami just to get started on that. In week two, they didn't blitz out a lot, I think 15 times, and they were successful. Week 17, they blitzed over 50% of the time, and Allen threw, I think, three touchdowns and 25 attempts. That game got out of hand real quick, and eventually it was Matt Barkley time. So if I'm Brian Flores, I'm looking at what the Steelers did, and I'm going, okay, we're not going to blitz Allen. We're going to throw different coverages. We're going to throw safety spinners at him. You know, when he turns his back to run play action and he turns back around, we want him to see a different coverage. And I wonder if – the term blueprint is very simplistic and doesn't encompass the whole thing. But if you go back to last year with Allen, he was beating man coverage to death early on. Then he started seeing some weird coverages, and it kind of affected him. So Daboll said, all right, let's go short, short, short. And – down the stretch, he really kind of figured it out. But, you know, the third-year bump of all time aside, he's still a young quarterback, and you can still fool him. And the Dolphins are great at running zero blitzes and, you know, crazy stuff up front and then dropping everyone into coverage. So Brian Flores has the personnel and the acuity and the past to do similar things to kind of throw Josh Allen off. And I'll be very curious to see how Daboll adjusts to that as far as, you know, different route concepts, get guys downfield, try and draw the intermediate defenders down so you can have some one-on-one matchups. And the Steelers didn't really allow that.
Doug Farrar, our guest, USA Today, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here on WGR. I thought of a lot of different things while you were talking, and I was thinking about Flores, but you kind of filled it in there on him. Reaction to a game like that, especially when you're watching on TV and may not be able to pick up on coverages and things like that, Doug, is, well, run the ball more, right? And I wonder, just like, not even necessarily specific to Steelers Bills, but we're at a point in time in this league, and you're very much a student of the history of the game. I mean, the league is just crazy for passing. The season starts and you have Prescott and Brady throwing over 100 times. And it might not have even like jumped out at you with, you know, how sort of normal or normalized that's become. So is that something we're going to see teams do? Is this too simplistic, sort of a counterpoint to this trend? And like the Steelers, it's almost like we've seen games like this where the defense could be saying, go ahead, take your 5 yards. Mm-hmm. But
yes.
I don't know if the Bills want those 5 yards, really.
Without question. And, well, it's something, I mean, the league has expanded. The league is using quarters coverage, which is, you know, four across, four guys taking one quarter of the field deep. Quarters coverage has increased in frequency from 2018 to 2020, 300%. Teams are running it three times more now. I would expect that to continue. And it goes away from the Seattle single high because everyone realized, oh, that only works if you have Richard Sherman and Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas. If you're running country cover three with average guys, you're going to get killed. So a lot more too high. This is the Brandon Staley, Vic Fangio, you know, the running at New Orleans. Dennis Allen did a brilliant job against Aaron Rodgers. And that's my point. Aaron Rodgers' kryptonite is too high, always has been. You know, his three worst games of the last calendar year were Tampa Bay, Carolina, and New Orleans, and they all ran a ton of cover two at him. And at that point, you're saying, okay, we dare you to run the ball. You know, just run the ball. The Texans in the season premiere game last year ran a bunch of two high at Mahomes, and Mahomes said, okay, I'll just hand the ball off to CEH, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Mm-hmm. And Edwards-Helaire ran for 125 yards, scored a touchdown, 25 carries. So what defenses are trying to do is to set up different, and when I say two deep safeties, that's where it starts. Now, you can have one guy spin down, but what a two-safety shell allows you to do is not only do cover two and two-man and quarters, it allows you to spin your safeties in some really, really interesting ways to the point where you can fool an Aaron Rodgers. You can fool a Tom Brady. So I think that's where – I think you're – you know, that's not out of whack at all. I think that's exactly where the league is going. It's becoming very much a two-high league, but not in, like, the mid-2000s when everyone wanted to run Tampa 2 like the Buccaneers or Lovie Smith with the Bears. Now it's too high to start, and then it could be any one of 15 different things after the snap, after the quarterback play fakes and turns his head, after the headphone goes off. You know, it's too high, but within that structure, there's so many more things to deal with. And I think that's how defenses are responding to the fact that, and, you know, based on what I've seen from the Bills in the last year and, you know, McDermott and Daboll talking, they don't really have an awesome running back, and they don't really seem to care. They're like, this is our offense, deal with it. And that's how defenses are dealing with it.
Do you think that that will lead, Doug, to – I mean, this is not something that I would expect to manifest quickly necessarily, but do you think teams will crack that by passing, or do you think we'll see more commitment to running because more teams are going to start playing that way against these dangerous passing offenses?
Well, it's interesting. I wrote a long piece about Aaron Rodgers against the Saints yesterday. And this is the Staley defense, Saints. Panthers are doing it really well, kind of under the radar. A bunch of defenses are doing it. Buffalo can do it well. You get it. That's the best safety duo in the NFL with Poyer and Hyde. And there's what's called a gap sitter. Because if you're running against light boxes, that's supposed to succeed unless you have a safety who will then come down and be what's called the gap fitter. And he's taking the role of a linebacker 20 years ago because you're playing, you know, nickel or dime. And I think the Bills played base like 5% of the time last year. That's not an exaggeration. It was like nickel and a ton of dime or whatever. So within that structure, you can't just roll 60 DBs out there, you know, 50% of the time and say, okay, go ahead and run on us. What then it becomes is one of you, and it's not a box safety, it's a safety playing deep third or intermediate and crashing down to fit the gap that the light box presents. And that's where offenses get in trouble. The way to counter that is you run your receiver on a sweep, you get your receivers involved in blocking, you have a tight end who's responsible for that fitter, but you have to assign an offensive player to that new sort of position. And that, you know, it's I wrote a whole book about it a few years ago, The Genius of Desperation, about the cat and mouse game. Like, okay, one offensive coach comes up with this, and then the defensive coaches all huddle in the big cabal and, oh, you know, the cauldron full of smoke, and what are we going to do? And then somebody figures that out. And it's an incredibly fascinating time to watch both offenses and defenses adjust to each other in ways that would have been inconceivable even 5 years ago. I mean, 5 years ago, Urban Meyer was talking about how RPOs are going to come into the NFL. And then, as you guys will see against the Dolphins, obviously, RPO is a staple. With Miami's sure. offense, RPO is the staple. So things are moving at an accelerated rate on both sides of the ball, and it's just fascinating to watch.
Is there a loggerheads kind of moment coming between analytics and what I might want to call sort of the natural evolution of the sport, where you have these ebbs and flows, runs and passes, and these trends? I wonder if, like, this might be a really bad comparison, but so baseball got to the point where, like, okay, we really need to hit home runs. We need to stop bunting. We need to stop, you know, moving the runner up, stealing bases. It's bad math. So we're going to go launch angle. And I feel like baseball resisted because, come on, that's not baseball. And then eventually that resistance fell. And then hitting home runs, and it's okay if you strike out, that became the sport. Is there something like that at work here, where maybe coaches are going to want to just, again, very generally, Doug, move to the running game and make that adjustment, and whatever kind of power team-to-team analytics people have are going to say, like, no, you know, your best running play, okay, maybe it's 6 yards now, but we still want to throw it.
What's that line, only a Sith deals in absolutes? I mean, I think anytime you make an absolute proclamation about, you know, pro analytics, and I wrote for Football Outsiders for 10 years, so obviously I'm pro analytics. I think anytime you do an absolute on either side of that, you're making a mistake. So to me, like when I recited those stats about how the Dolphins blitzed Josh Allen not a lot in week 2 and a lot in week 17, mm-hmm. Okay, so that's information. That's interesting, especially in context of what the Steelers did. Now, what you don't have, like, okay, the Steelers blitzed Josh Allen once in week 1. Now, well, what does that tell us? It doesn't really tell us anything. You have to go back and watch a tape and say, okay, how did they get pressure without blitzing when they blitzed, like, over 40% of the time last year? And why did they do that? So you at that point, you have an awareness that Josh Allen can just nuke your defense if you blitz him. And you know from watching tape that the Steelers did all these different, you know, interesting coverage things. When you have stats like, okay, the Dolphins in week 2 and the Dolphins in week 17, you still have to go and watch tape and see why it is. I think if anyone looking to analyze the game is just looking at analytics or just looking at tape, I think you're getting half the picture either way. To me, the best guys, best people doing this, I should say, are the ones who find their own ways to marry both. So as far as a loggerhead, I mean, the smarter teams are already, you know, smarter teams have been invested in that marriage for a long time, and they have the edge. I mean, the Browns, third youngest team in the NFL, go find a hole in their roster. They're one of the more analytically astute teams in the NFL, so that's kind of where that is.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of Miami and New England? Yeah, because, of course, the Bills are playing Miami. We've talked some about their defensive tactics last year. What did you make of Tua, their offense, just the overall on the Dolphins, Doug?
I think Tua looked in rhythm. I'll tell you one thing. with the Patriots, you can always tell who is the receiver they fear. You guys know this because you have the Patriots. And usually it's like it's double the two guy, and you put a one-on-one on the guy you most fear. Well, they seem to double Devontae Parker, and they would single up on Jalen Waddle. And based on what I saw, that Jalen Waddle, I mean, they had eyes on Waddle the whole time. That guy is a freak. That he is going to cause problems for your defense, no matter how good your defense is. He just, you know, deep stuff and crossers and has ungodly speed. And he's not Devontae Smith. He's not 5'9", 166. That guy can break tackles, too. I thought Tua looked in rhythm in his game. He's not going to be ever a great deep passer. He's a timing and rhythm guy. He's a point guard. If you took Russell Wilson and subtracted his velocity by like 40%, that's Tua at his best. And I think, you know, he's shown more of a comfort with the offense. I know he said in the offseason he didn't really know the offense when he came in, and that's more common than people think. So it's not something I freak out about. I think his comfort level's improved. You know, I don't think he's a top 10 quarterback. I don't think they're asking him to be that right now. It's, hey, we have a great defense. And, you know, as with a lot of defensive coaches, Brian Flores just doesn't want his quarterback to mess things up.
Don't lose the game.
And in McDermott's case, it's interesting because with McDermott as a coach with a defensive background, I mean, they run all kinds of crazy stuff on offense. So McDermott plays against type in that regard. But, you know, I think Tua's coming along nicely. I think he had some really good answers in the short to intermediate game and certainly with the RPO stuff. He can fake the camera out when he decides to keep it on an RPO or just a zone read. You know, he presents problems that are common to that type of quarterback, the runner slash passer. He's learning to run to throw instead of running to run. You can tell his comfort with the offense has improved. And, you know, they're going to present a challenge. And what I'm fascinated to see, as I mentioned before, is how much do they – I think they're going to show blitz a lot and then back off. You could see eight guys at the line, and all of a sudden it's cover three, and everyone's, you know, the linebackers are going curl flat, and what the heck just happened here? And they're going to try and fool Josh Allen and say, just come after him. That's what I think. That's what I do.
Mixed. You know, it's interesting, Doug. The early last year, like, Allen got off to this great start, and then Kansas City and Tennessee were rough games, you know, a few, like, 5 or 6 weeks into the season last year. And that seemed like a lot of zone. And so the book started to be like, Allen can't handle, like, that's the medicine to feed him if you want to try to handle him. And then I think he maybe debunked that against San Francisco on Monday Night Football, but maybe we're circling back to flooding, you know, just putting guys in coverage and seeing how he handles it.
Well, a couple things. He faced a lot of man coverage in the first, say, 4 to 5 weeks, and I don't know why you would ever play that much man against a guy who can run like he can. Because in man, you guys know this, you have to turn your back to the quarterback. Remember the Packers against Colin Kaepernick in that playoff game where Colin Kaepernick ran for like 4,000 yards? Well, that's why, because they played a bunch of man, and you don't want to do that. And I would really pump the brakes on any sort of proclamations of, oh, the year three thing was a fluke, it was such a big bump, there has to be regression. Again, the Steelers' defensive game plan, you can frame that and put it on the wall. That's one of the best defensive game plans I've seen in the last 5 years. They went completely against type, and hey, they had the whole offseason to figure it out, but they went completely against type of what they normally do, both in coverage concepts and in pressure concepts. With Miami, I mean, Josh Allen has already seen both versions of it. You know, them blitzing, them not blitzing, them faking blitzes and dropping back. You know, he's seen the elephant in that case. So at that point, it's up to him to just decipher late drops, late switches, and, you know, late spinners with safeties. And I think that's something that's still under development. But, you know, he's a young quarterback. That's okay. He certainly did enough of it. He did enough good things against that stuff down the stretch where teams kind of went, oh, okay, we have to figure out something else. But what Pittsburgh gave him was something else. That was two handfuls. And, you know, Flores is a smart guy. Their defensive coordinator, whose name I dropped out of my head right now, Doyle, really smart guy too. They run a lot of different stuff, so it'll be another challenge for Josh for sure.
Just to add to the commentary about the Miami offense, Will Fuller this week, by the way, is mixed in after being suspended in week one. Doug, always a treat. What can we do for you?
I don't know. Some wings?
Wings.
We don't really have great wings in Seattle. That's not what we do.
Yeah, you know, Seattle has other virtues, many other virtues. Yeah. I'm sure.
No barbecue, no wings. We got great sushi. We got all kinds of Asian food, and I love it here. But, you know, you go to, like, Indianapolis for a comment, that's what, like, Midwestern food tastes like.
Once in a while you get the craving. Very good.
Exactly.
Thanks a lot for your time.
All right. Thank you very much.
Doug Farrar on Twitter at @NFL_Doug Farrar knows a lot about the game.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.